Okay, welcome everybody for another go at the 11th chapter, which, as you can see, is musically oriented, and sound is a way more important, sound effects, than meaning. Not that there is no meaning. In fact, there's quite a lot, and the progress is fairly slow. We stopped, I think, we're in the Ormond Hotel. There are two barmaids, characterized by the color of their hair, bronze and gold, Mina Kennedy and Lydia Douce. And slowly people come in. First is Simon Dedalus, and he's talking a bit, and we stopped. They've done a bit of exchange, now there's nothing to say. And as I repeat, Joyce is very good at these moments when a few people are together and something should be said, and yet there is nothing important to communicate. So it said then, none, not said, nothing, yes. And you see, this is a silence that you feel, and it is a bit uncomfortable. And now from here we go on then. Yeah. Do we hear anything? No?
Oh, okay.
Don't hear.
Again, yes.
Good.
Gaily Miss Deuce polished a tumbler trilling.
Oh, my Dolores,
Queen of the East and Seas. Was Mr. Lidwell in today? In came Lenehan. Round him peered Lenehan. Mr. Bloom reached Essex Bridge. Yes, Mr. Bloom crossed Bridge of Essex. To Martha I must write by paper, dailies, girl there, Sybil. Bloom, old Bloom, blue Bloom is on the Rye. He was in at lunchtime, Miss Deuce said. Lenehan came forward. Was Mr. Boylan looking for me? He asked. She answered. Miss Kennedy, was Mr. Boylan in while I was upstairs? She asked. Miss Voice of Kennedy answered, a second teacup poised, a gaze upon a page. No, he was not. Miss Gaze of Kennedy, heard not seen, read on. Lenehan, round the sandwich bell, wound his round body round. Peep, who's in the corner? No glance of Kennedy rewarding him. He yet made overtures. To mind her stops. To read only the black ones, round O and crooked S. Jean.
Yeah, one of the issues is, who is worth talking to? And you realize that Lenehan, who comes in, is not as accepted as Simon Dedalus was. Anyway, gaily, to break the silence, there's some singing. Gaily, Miss Deuce polished a tumbler trilling, O I Dolores, Queen of the Eastern Seas. That was one of these oriental things that was very much a thing. And of course, what she sing is, O my Dolores. And she, in a way, puts her in, I Dolores, probably not aware of the Spanish, and in a way idolizing herself, not knowing. Then, was Mr. Lidwell in today? In came Lenehan. We know that Lenehan, in the previous chapter, arranged to meet Blazes Boylan in the Ormond because of that invention. He obviously wants to do something with a profit for himself. Round him peered Lenehan. And then in the same paragraph, we switch over to Bloom, who's quite a distance away. Bloom reached Essex Bridge. So he's on the other side of the river. Yes, Mr. Bloom crossed Bridge of Essex. So you see the yes, and Essex is a sort of, by the way, the bridge was no longer called Essex Bridge. It was Grattan Bridge in the meantime. But sometimes the old names linger. Then we switch to Bloom's thoughts. To Martha, I must write, answered the letter, by paper, dailies, opposite name of a stationery shop. There, there, Sybil. Broom. Old broom, blue broom is on the rye. You heard that already. That is a kind of, like a conjugational broom. Bloom, old broom, blue bloom. Again, we've heard it before, it's on the rye. So Lenin. It was obviously Lenin who asked. His voice precedes his entrance here. He was in at lunchtime. You see, they don't react as positively to him. Lenin came forward. "Was Mr. Boyle looking for me?" he asked. She answered, "Miss Kennedy, was Mr. Boyle in while I was upstairs?" she asked. "Miss Voice of Kennedy," answered. Not the voice of Miss Kennedy, so there's these elaborations. "Miss Voice of Kennedy," answered. "A second teacup poised, her gaze upon the page." No, it was not. You see, they're very short to him. Then Miss Gaze of Kennedy again, heard, not seen, read on. Lenin, and look at the sentence here, Lenin round the sandwich bell, wound his round body round. Again, an effect you can do here. Then he again goes into one of his routines. "Peep, who's in the corner?" No glance of Kennedy rewarding him, so he's ignored. Yet he yet made overtures, we understand that, but it's of course also a musical term, overtures, to mind her stops, to read only the black ones, round O and crooked S, so he's doing some silly flirting. And then we hear, "Jingle, jaunty, jingle." I think it's the first time. This is the jingle, and I must have said that, is also an echo of Bloom's and Morris' bed in the fourth chapter. When he went out, the bed jingled. And here the jingle is carried over to the jaunting car. That was a particular vehicle. And jingle, jaunty, jingle is a kind of the signature tune for Blazes Boylan. Almost everybody has a kind of appropriate melody. Jingle, jaunty, jingle. Good. Then we go on.
"Girl, girl," she read, and did not glance. Take no notice. She took no notice while he read by rote a sulphur fable to her, clappering flatly. "A fox met a stork, said the fox to the stork, will you put your bill down in my throat and pull up a bone?" He droned in vain. Miss Deuce turned to her tea, aside. He sighed, aside. "Ah, me, oh, my." He greeted Mr. Dedalus and got a nod. "Greetings from the famous son of a famous father." "Who may he be?" Mr. Dedalus asked. Lenehan opened most genial arms. "Who? Who may he be?" he asked. "Can you ask? Stephen, the youthful bard." Dry. Mr. Dedalus' famous father laid by his dry, filled pipe. "I see," he said. "I didn't recognize him for the moment. I hear he's keeping very select company. Have you seen him lately?" He had.
"Oh. Girl, girl," she read, and did not glance. So, I would say, Lenin is ignored. Take no notice. She took no notice while he read by rote, that is, extempore, a sulphur fable. Sulphur is also musical, of course. For her, I don't know what the sulphur fable is. For her, plappering flatly. You see, he's always doing something that he thinks is entertaining. "A fox met a stork, said the fox to the stork, will you put your bill down in my throat and pull up a bone?" Entertainment. He droned in vain. Miss Deuce turned to her sea, aside. He sighed, aside. "Ah, me, oh my." So you see, shows well, nothing going on. They don't want to talk to him, but it's a musical thing, you see. Bone, he groaned in vain. Mr. to a T aside, he sighed aside. "Ah, me, oh my." He greeted Mr. Dedalus and got a nod. Again, no communication then. Greetings from the famous son of a famous father. Who may he be? Mandela thought. Lenin opened most genius arms. You remember his gestures that he always, always theatrical. Who? Lenin was wrong. Who may he be, he asked. Can you ask, Steve? Stephen the youthful bard. So Lenin tells Dedalus that he's seen his son before. Dry. Obviously, no answer. Mr. Dedalus, famous father, laid by his dry filled pipe. So dry refers to the... I see, he said. I didn't recognize him for the moment. I hear he's keeping Resurrect company. Have you seen him lately? So we can see Dedalus' father and son are not in good relationship at the moment. Anyway, Stephen is not living with his father. He was in the tower. He had. Yep.
I craft an ectable with him this very day, said Lenin, in Mooney's Envie and in Mooney's Surmer. He had received the rhino for the labor of his muse. He smiled at Bronze's tea-bathed lips, at listening lips and eyes. The elite of Erin hung upon his lips, the ponderous pundit Hugh McHugh, Dublin's most brilliant scribe and editor, and that minstrel boy of the Wild Wet West, who was known by the euphonious appellation of the O'Madden Burke. After an interval, Mr. Dedalus raised his grog, and that must have been highly diverting, said he. I see. He drank, with faraway morning mountain eye. He set down his glass. He looked toward the door.
Hiya. And then again, Lenin always trying to elevate his speech. He quaffed the nectar bowl with him this very day. You know, Stephen invited the newspaper people for a drink, and of course, Lenin came along. Said Lenin, in Mooney's Auville and in Mooney's sur Mer, Mooney's pub, and he does that obviously with some French experience where the hotel is Auville and sur Mer. He had received the rhino for the labor of his muse. Rhino is slang for money, a word that doesn't quite fit in the sentence. The labor of his muse, remember that Stephen had invited the newspaper men through Lenin, and obviously said that the money he had, he got for some kind of poetry he wrote. He didn't say it was his teacher's salary. Sorry, he makes that. He smiled at bronze, tea-bathed lips and listening lips and eyes. Then the elite of Erin hung upon his lips. And again, you see how lips combines the two paragraphs. The ponderous pundit, Hugh McHugh. And remember, he said that a ponderous pundit McHugh in the Limerick, in the newspaper office. Ponderous pundit is also a nice alliterative thing. Dublin's most brilliant scribe and editor. And that minstrel boy of the Wild West, that is also a song, West, who is known by the euphonious appellation of the O'Madden Burke. The O'Madden Burke is an Irish way, he's usually the head of a clan, that is the. So you see his, trying to sound important and on the very little. By the way, I said the Minstrel Boy of the Wild West is a song. Somebody, a scholar who specialized on music, has found out that in this chapter there are more than 50 references to song. Sometimes they're songs, sometimes they're quoted, sometimes indirect. So it's full of music. And nowadays it's easy to find these songs, of course, on the internet. After an interval, after a pause, but he writes, interval is also a musical term. Mr. Dedalus raised his grog and that must have been highly diverting, said he. I see. So he doesn't want to talk to him. Diverting is also interesting because divertissimo is all a musical term. So you know that method by now. Said he. I see. He drank. With faraway morning mountain eye, morning. And of course, he heard that one of the barmaids had had a holiday in Mostrava, where there are the mountains of Mourn, which is also a song. So it's also the mountains of Mourn. Set down his cross.
I see you've moved the piano. The tune I was in today, Miss Deuce replied, tuning it for the smoking concert, and I never heard such an exquisite player. Is that a fact? Didn't he, Miss Kennedy? The real classical, you know, and blind too, poor fella. Not 20, I'm sure he was. Is that a fact? Mr. Dedalus said. He drank and strayed away. So sad to look at his face, Miss Deuce condoled. God's curse on bitch's bastard.
Yep. So he looked toward the saloon door. I see you have moved the piano. Obviously, these are regulars, so they know what it is. And there is a piano. The tuner was in today, Miss Deuce replied, tuning it for the smoking concert. So there was a piano tuner in to do the smoking concert. Must be a concert. It's not a smoking concert. It's a smoking concert, of course. And I never heard such an exquisite player. Is that a fact? Now, of course, Simon Dedalus is not interested in that. And when you can always say, is that a fact? We would say, so, or something like that. No, I want to say no communication. And Joyce can explain that quite well. Such an exquisite player. Is that a fact? Didn't he, Miss Kennedy, the real classical, you know, and blind too, the poor fellow. Not 20, I'm sure he was. Is that a fact? Dedalus said. He drank and strayed away, so he's leaving them. So sad to look at his face, Miss Deuce condoled. And then we have, God curse on bitches bastard. And at this point you might remember that the blind piano tuner, whom Bloom helped across the street, in the previous chapter, was walking and somebody buffed into him and he was angry and said, you're blind or I, you bitch's bastard. And this bitch's bastard is now taken over, carried over by the text. It's not in anyone's mind. This is now, in this chapter, we're on another level that in a way the author keeps track of it and says, as soon as the blind piano tune is mentioned, we also heard his curse that nobody, of course, has heard in the hotel bar. God's curse on bitches, Boston. So you see, there are sort of connections that are beyond realism, that moves the whole thing on a higher level. I usually call it the meta level.
Good. Tink to her pity, cried the diner's bell. To the door of the dining room came bald Pat, came bothered Pat, came Pat, waiter of all men, lager for diner, lager without alacrity she served. With patience, Lenehan waited for Boylan with impatience, for Jingle Jaunty Blazer's boy. Upholding the lid, he, who, gazed in the coffin, at the oblique triple piano wires. He pressed, the same who pressed indulgently her hand, soft pedaling a triple of keys, to see the thicknesses of felt advancing, to hear the muffled hammer fall in action.
No. Tink, to her pity, cried a diner's bell. There's a dining room and there's a bell. To the door of the dining room came bald Pat. So there's a waiter, he's bald, came bothered Pat. Now, bothered needs an explication. Why? We haven't heard him, he isn't busy, he is not bothered. But bothered is also, or here mainly, an Irish word for deaf. That's a word that is an Irish word and is still in use. So he doesn't hear too well. You see, the organ is, of course, the ear. And here you have also the negation, somebody who does not hear well. And I have full sympathy. Ormond came back, waiter of Ormond. Lager for diner. So a diner wants a lager and he has to get it at the bar. Lager without electricity. So remember before that, she said alacrity and she served alacrity, but Pat or Lennon are not worth this kind of display. And then it says, with patience, Lennon waited for Boyle with impatience. With patience, and remember in the previous thing, Lennon said he was going to meet Boylan, and somebody made a joke, I am boiling with impatience. Boiling with impatience, boiling. You see, this is a very, not a great joke, that kind of thing. But here it's carried over. For jingle jaunty blazes boiling. You see, jingle jaunty is always the refrain or the tune for Lennon. And here you can see now what I call that meta level. Upholding the lid, he, and of course we had several people mentioned before, we don't know who he is, who, that could be our question, gazed in the coffin, why is there a coffin around? At the oblique, triple, piano. Ah, so he's obviously walking toward the piano and looking at it, and it seems, which I didn't know, that the main body of the piano is called the coffin. And here the author is practically explaining to us who it is and what he's doing. But this is a different kind of thing. This is shown here as something artificial that you can look at, and it seems the chapter is almost aware of its own nature of what it is. He pressed, and then it's just the same who pressed in those your hand. We've read that a few minutes before. Soft pedaling a triple of keys to see the thicknesses of felt advancing. You know, the piano with a felt. They hear the muffled hammer fall in action. So he's looking at the technicalities of the piano. And you can see that this is good.
Two sheets, cream vellum paper, one reserve, two envelopes. When I was in Wisdom Healy's. Wise bloom in dailies, Henry Flower bought. Are you not happy in your home? Flower to console me and a pin cuts love. Means something, language of flower. Was it a daisy? Innocence, that is. Respectable girl, meet after mass. Thanks awfully muchly. Wise bloom eyed on the door, a poster. A swaying mermaid, smoking midnight waves. Smoke, mermaids, coolest whiff of all, hair streaming, love long. For some man, for Raoul. He eyed and saw afar on Essex Bridge a gay hat riding on a jaunting car. It is third time. Coincidence. Jingling on supple rubbers, it jaunted from the bridge to Ormond Quay. Follow. Risk it. Go quick. At four. Near now. Out. Tuppence, sir, the shop girl dared to say. Aha, I was forgetting. Excuse. And four. At four, she. Winsomely, she unblew him whom, smiled. Blue smile. Quick, go. To noon. Think of the only pebble on the beach. Does that so all. For men.
Yep. This is a very typical passage here in the song, and I usually spend some time over it. Two sheets, cream vellum, paper, one reserve, two envelopes, when I was in Wisdom Healy, wise bloom in daily tender flower bought. That's quite a complex sentence, isn't it? And you're right, it has several subjects. First of all, it's the object, two sheets, cream vellum paper. So, and we said Bloom is buying the stationery, and he's buying two sheets, cream vellum, that is a bit better than ordinary paper, one reserve, and you can see Bloom, he gets two sheets, because you might spoil one, it's good to have one in the reserve. Two envelopes, it's open, and then Bloom thinks, when I was in Wisdom Healy's, because Bloom once worked in a stationery when they sold paper. Wise Bloom, in Daly's, that's the stationery shop, Henry Flower bought. So you see, Broom is buying, but he is buying it in the function of Henry Flower, who is the correspondent of Arthur Clifford. So you see, you have a double subject because Broom buys it in the role of somebody else. Or to illustrate it differently, you might say two different instruments play Broom and Henry Flower. And you have a mixture of objective description and interior monologue. And this is quite typical for the chapter, which is really a mixture and hybrid. And that's one reason why you have to look almost at every sentence to see what it is. By the way, the Healy stationery shop was named after Wisdom Healy. That was a real name. And then it says, Wisdom Healy, wise Broom, because he's careful about this. Then, are you not happy in your home, is of course what she wrote to him. Flower to console me, and the pin cuts, look. I remember there was a flower attached with a pin in the letter. So to console me, and the pin cuts, look. What is look? Well, you may know there was, maybe still is, a superstition that you do not make presents of things that cut or prick. It's bad luck. So when you a pin cuts love, and when love is cut, you only have love. So that's the idea. Means something. Language of flower, obviously the language of flowers. And the flower is also cut to flow. But of course we can also read, and you would have read it like that, language of flow. The flow of the language is quite essential here. Was it a daisy, the flower? Remember, daisy, Healy, Daly, daisy, similar words. In other words, it's an orchestrated passage. And you could also always imagine, as I said, that several instruments play several of the tunes. Was it a daisy? Innocence, that is. That's the language of flowers. Respectable girl, meet after mass. So that could be an advertisement. If you had an advertisement, a girl always had to be respectable, otherwise you wouldn't get the job. Meet after mass. And of course, if you want to meet, and Martha Clifford said, when will we meet? Where would you meet? You usually meet on the Sunday in church after Mass, where you go anyway, I mean, you can easily meet someone. Thanks awfully muchly. So we see Broom is not really interested in meeting this person. It's more a kind of a substitute flirtation, thanks. And then you have another, wise, taking up the wise and wisdom of before, wise Broom eyed on the door a postal. A swaying mermaid smoking midnight waves. So there's a poster, and obviously it's a poster of a tobacco. And a mermaid, of course, is a siren. Midnight wave. Smoke mermaid's coolest whiff of all. I'm quite sure that this, what a slogan, either it existed or Joyce made it up. Smoke mermaid's cool. And you see, advertisements are also sirens. They want to seduce you to buy something. So that is the coolest whiff of all. I hope somebody will find that still. Hair streaming. Lovelorn. Of course, you have here all these, in literature, all these women sitting near the sea or a river, Lorelei and all of that, that tempt with their long hair, mermaids. And then briefly, for some man. For Owl, that is in the novel, Switch of Cinnabon, where a woman buys clothes for Owl. And then he eyed and saw afar on Essex Bridge a gay hat riding on a jaunting car. He eyed and saw afar Okay, you have to ride him on a jaunting car again. And the jaunting car we've already seen. He is now in the shop. He's just crossed the bridge and can look out the window on the bridge where he just came. And there he saw the bridge riding car. It is. Third time. Coincidence. Now we know who is. Has a gay hat riding on a jaunting car. The jaunting car is new. Boylan. He has a gay hat. And then Broom think, oh, it is. Third time. Coincidence. Because he crossed the path of Boylan three times. First, he saw him from the funeral carriage. Then, when he wanted to dive into the library, Boylan came and Broom tried to get out of his way and he went to the museum. It is third time. Coincidence. Well, if you know something, it is of course, a coincidence. So here, it's the third time. And the next paragraph shows, in fact, Boylan jingling on supple rubbers he jaunted from the bridge to Ormond Quay. Follow. Biscuit, go quick. At four. Near now, out. So Broom obviously has heard before he left, but we didn't. But when Boylan coming at four, she said, risk it. Go quick. Near now, out. And then you realize, Tuppence, sir, the shocker, as you say, he almost forgot to pay. He wanted to rush out. Aha, I was forgetting. Excuse. And four. There should be a dash before the and four. If you don't have it, you put it in. Why is it so important whether there's a dash or not? Because it costs tuppence, and he obviously pays with sixpence, and she gives him the change, and fourpence it is, and so it is spoken. And then at four, the simple sense, and four, and fourpence, reminds him of what Molly said. At four, she said, Boylan is coming, probably. Winsomely, she on Broom him home smiled. Again, the seduction motive, the smile, winsome. But Broom is in a hurry. Broom, smile, quick, go, tenue, she wants to leave. Think you're the only pebble on the beach. Think you're the only pebble on the beach. It's a song, it's many songs. When men are frustrated, we say, you're not the only one, and things like that. You're not the only pebble on the beach. You're not the only oyster in the stew. It's several songs of that sort. Does that to all for men, like for Rao. And again, you see how carefully composed it is, and how slow the process, because one has to, or one can, one should, one might see all these links. And of course, I'm now posing as a sort of substitute for the memory that one might have, but nobody has a complete memory. Good.
In drowsy silence, gold bent on a page. From the saloon, a call came, long in dying. That was a tuning fork the tuner had, that he forgot, that he now struck. A call again, that he now poised, that it now throbbed. You hear? It throbbed, pure, purer, softly and softlier, its buzzing prongs. Longer in dying call. Pat paid for Dinah's pop-corked bottle. And over tumbler tray and pop-cork bottle, ere he went, he whispered, bald and bothered, with Miss Deuce.
The bright stars fade.
A voiceless song sang from within, singing.
The morn is breaking.
A duodine of bird notes chirruped bright treble answer under sensitive hands. Brightly the keys, all twinkling, linked, all harps according, called to a voice to sing the strain of dewy morn, of youth, of love's leave-taking, life's love's morn.
The dewdrops pearl.
Fail. So now we return to the bar. See, we move around as in the previous chapter. In drowsy silence, Gold bent on her page. From the saloon, the organ bar, somebody described it as it must have been, there would have been an entrance with a bar, where the barmaids are. There would have been, I take it on the left, a dining room, where we haven't been. And there's a saloon on the right, with at the back, a piano. So we're also in different places, but still close together. From the saloon, long in dying. And then you have a certain different in rhythm. That was the tuning for the tune I had that he forget that he now struck a call again, that he now posted that it now throbbed. You hear? It throbbed. So there's a tuning fork that the tuner forgot it throbs. It throbbed purer, purer, softer, softer, it's buzzing broke, longer in dying call. In the overture, the call, pure, long and throbbing, long in dying call. So again, you could follow the progress by going back to the overture. Pat paid for the diner's pop-corked bottle, and over tumble tray and pop-corked bottle, you see the effect, pop-corked bottle, ere he went, he whispered, bald and bothered, to Miss Deuce. So he's getting some. And then, and that must be the voice from Simon Dedalus, who is sitting at the piano and singing. I say there were lots of pianos in pubs, and still to this day, if you go to Dublin or Ireland, you shall find these musical pubs, these singing pubs, that kind of thing. The bright stars fade, so he sings. That is a song, Goodbye, Sweetheart, Goodbye. You may have heard it or heard of it. A voiceless song sang from within, singing, the morn is breaking. And then you have a description of it. A duodene, that is 12, or bird notes, chirruped. So melodies are close to birds. Treble answer under sensitive hands. Brightly the keys, all twinkling, linked, all harpsichording. Call to a voice to sing the strain of dewy morn of youth, of love's leaf taking life, love's morn. Kind of description of it. The dew drops pearl. I've been told, I wouldn't have known it, in 19th century, Goodbye, Sweetheart, for me, was an immoral song because it is morning, the dew drops pearl, and the lover says goodbye. So obviously they must have spent the night together. So by Victorian terms, this is was quite a risky sort of thing. In music, you can do it. The dewdrops fell.
Lenehan's lips over the counter lisped a low whistle of decoy. But look this way, he said. Rosa Castile. Jingle jaunted by the curb and stopped. She rose and closed her reading, Rose of Castile. Fretted, forlorn, dreamily rose. Did she fall or was she pushed? He asked her. She answered, slighting, ask no question till hear no lies. Like lady, ladylike.
Yeah, so that's a short one. Lenin's lips over the counter lisped the low whistle of decoy. And again you see the words lip, lips, lisped, whistle of decoy. But look this way, he said, Rose of Castile. She has a rose. And he remembers the song, remembering that he was in the newspaper office where he talked about the Rose of Castile, made a joke of it. Rose, as I say, the Irish opera taking place in Spain, Castile. And then, and here you hear the rhythm of the jingle jaunted by the curb and stopped. She rose and closed her reading Rose of Castile. Again, you see the effect of rose. She rose and Rose of Castile. Fretted, forlorn, dreamily rose. Fretted is when you're betrothed or something like that. But the fret is also on a guitar. Strings are over these little bridges, and they're called frets. So that is also a musical instrument. I say this because the technique of using musical words is not entirely new. In fact, there's a Shakespeare passage where Shakespeare also uses the word fret in the sense of music and in the word of in the psychological sense. Dreamily rose. And then he says, again, trying to, the kind of overtures, the kind of advances that women like so much. Did she fall or was she pushed, he asked her. Not given. She answered, slighting. Ask no question and you'll hear no lies. Like, lady, ladylike.
Lazarus Boylan's smart tan shoes creaked on the bar floor where he strode. Yes, gold from anear by bronze from afar. Lenehan heard and knew and hailed him. See, the conquering hero comes. Between the car and window, warily walking, went Bloom, unconquered hero. See me, he might. The seat he sat on. Warm. Black, wary he-cat walked towards Richie Goulding's legal bag, lifted aloft, saluting.
And I from thee.
I heard you were around, said Lazy Boylan. He touched to fair Miss Kennedy a rim of his slanted straw. She smiled on him. But Sister Bronze outsmiled her, preening for him a richer hair, a bosom, and a rose. Boylan bespoke potions. What's your cry? Glass of bitter? Glass of bitter, please, and a slow gin for me. Wire in yet? Not yet. At four, he. All said four.
So now Boylan enters, and you can see Boylan as a kind of dandy. He instantly attracts the attention of both barmaids. Blazes Boylan's smart tan shoes creaked on the bar floor where he strode. To stride is a kind of a proud entrance. Yes. Gold from an ear, by bronze from afar. This is a kind of tune that we hear all along. Lennon heard and knew and hailed him. See, the conquering hero comes. That is from, I think it's even from Handel or Messiah or something. The conquering hero comes. And in a way, that is what Boylan is, conquering hero. Between the bar and the window, warily walking, went Bloom. He obviously has been following Boylan, now sees that Boylan's jaunty car stopped, and he comes. See me he might. See me he might. Boylan might see him. The seat he sat on, warm, you see. Black, wary he-cat walked towards Richie Gold's leading bag. He lifts the log, saluting. So he walks like a cat, sort of, you know, on silent steps, things like that. And then he mentioned Richie Goulding's leading bag. Now we haven't yet seen Richie Goulding, but he turned up in the third chapter where Stephen on the beach considered visiting his uncle, that's what it is, Liegelberg, and we only had a picture of a visit that doesn't take place. Richard Goulding, Liegelberg, he works for a legal firm, lift along saluting. So here now, Bloom walks and obviously knows Goulding outside. And I from thee, that's again the song. I hear you were around, said Blazes Boylan. Nothing special about that. I remember when you remember when it said Boylan's round body wound round the things. So you know that Boylan is in fact round, said Blazes Boylan. He touched to fair Miss Kennedy a rim of his slanted straw. He has a straw hat. And you see here, he's really a Boylan has an easy way. She smiled on him. But Sister Bronze outsmiled her, preening for him a richer hair, a bosom, and a rose. So they showed themselves to him. Boyle and bespoke potions. Of course, you do drinks, and of course, he would pay for Lennon. He's better off. What's your cry? What do you want? Glass of bitter? That's what Lennon wants. As I said, Lennon is always out for the free drink. You would see him several times, and he never pays for a drink. That's another national sport. Glass of bitter, please, and a slow gin for me. A slow gin, slow, slear. Slow gin is something, it's not alcoholic, it's something, or hardly, and this isn't sweet. Why would he order that? Well, if you go for an appointment with a woman to rehearse a song, a love song, you better don't smell of alcohol. So you see, so the choice of the drink is appropriate. Wire in yet? Wire is the telegram from the race, the horse race that ran at 3, and of course, after 3, and of course, it takes some time for the news to come in. Not yet. At 4, he all said 4. And then you have something else. Oh no, we stop here, yeah.
Fritz, you must say stop now. You must end now.
We must what?
You must stop with the hand when we when you want to stop next.
Yeah, I know what you mean now. So good. Yeah.
Wait. Goulding, a chance. What is he doing at the moment? Can't wait him. Wait. Hello! Where off to? Something to eat? I too was just in here. What? Ormond, best value in Dublin. Is that so? Dining room. Sit tight there. See, not be seen. I think I'll join you. Come on. Richie led on. Bloom followed by it. Dinner fit for a prince. Miss Deuce reached high to take a flagon, stretching her satin arm, her bust, that all but burst, so high. Oh, oh, jerked Lenehan, gasping at each stretch. Oh. But easily she seized her prey and led it low in triumph. Why don't you grow? Asked Blazes Boylan. She, Bronze, dealing from her jar thick syrupy liquor for his lips, looked as it flowed, flour in his coat. Who gave him? And syrup with her voice. Fine goods and small parcels. That is to say, she. Neatly she poured, slow, syrupy, slow.
Good. Cowley's red lugs. Lug is ear. Remember, we saw Father Cowley and Ben Dollard and Simon Dedalus. So they're all coming. In fact, it is in this in this chapter that we realize that many people we have in the previous one, all over the city, here come to the Ormond Hotel, the Ormond Bar. I remember when in 1982 there was a Bloomsday that was acted out. They said in the Ormond Hotel, which was still there, one could get a pint of beer for tuppence. In the meantime, it was more than a pound. And so we all went there. The catch was it had to be the old tuppence, the old Victorian penny, which, of course, nobody had. Anyway, Cowley's red lugs and Adam's apple, we've seen that before, in the door of Sherry's office. Avoid. Goulding, by chance. So Bloom thinks, avoid him. Goulding, whom he just met, is a chance. What is he doing in the Ormond? Boylan. Car waiting. Wait. Hello. That's now Bloom and Goulding talking. Hello. Where off to? Something to eat? Who? What's just? In here? What? Ormond? Best value in Dublin. Goulding always uses superlatives. That's the best place. Is that so? Dining room. Sit tight there. See, not be seen. Think I join you. And so Bloom takes the opportunity to have a meal, though he doesn't really need one as yet, as I understand, here. And so that would be a good way to see what is Boylan doing. He should be in Bloom's house by now. Come on. Ritchie led on. Bloom followed back. Dinner fit for prince. That's what Goulding says. He's always, says something is the best. Miss Deuce reached high to take a flagon for the slow gin, which is probably not the usual, so she has to get up somewhere, stretching her satin arm, her bust that all but burst so high. So the bust, but although she's obviously showing herself, displaying herself. Oh, oh, jerked Lenehan, grasping at each stretch. Oh, you can see here the way the verb jerked is also quite expressive. But easily she seized her prey and led it low in triumph. Why don't you grow? Asked Blazes Boylan. Again, he can say that. She bronzed, dealing from her jar, thick syrupy liquor, the slow thing. Syrupy is, of course, sweet. Liquor for his lips. Thick liquor lips looked as it flowed. Flour on his coat. Who gave him? And syrup with her voice. And remember, he took a flower from in the fruit shop where he was, and she now notices him. Of course, flower in the buttonhole, one tends to think of Oscar Wilde and all of that. Fine goods in small parcels. So you see, the girls react quite different to Dedalus, or Lenehan, or Boylan. That is to say, she neatly she poured slow, syrupy, slow. Here's fortune, Boylan said. And here we have a new.
Here's fortune, Blazer said. He pitched a broad coin down. Coin rang. Hold on, said Lenehan, till I... Fortune, he wished, lifting his bubbled ale. Scepter will win in a canter, he said. I plunged a bit, said Boylan, winking and drinking. Not on my own, you know. Fancy a friend of mine. Lenehan still drank and grinned at his tilted ale and at Miss Deuce's lips that all but hummed, not shut, the ocean song her lips had trilled. Idolores, the eastern seas. Clock whirred. Miss Kennedy passed their way. Flower, wonder who gave. Bearing away tea tray. Clock clacked. Miss Deuce took Boylan's coin, struck boldly the cash register. It clanged. Clock clacked. Fair one of Egypt teased and sorted in the till, and hummed and handed coins in change. Look to the west. A clack. For me. What time is that? Asked Blazes Boylan. 4 o'clock. Lenehan, small eyes a-hunger on her humming, bust a-humming, tugged Blazes Boylan's elbow sleeve. Let's hear the time.
Good. Here's fortune. He pitched the broad coin down. It's always the sounds. Coin rang. Hold on, said I, till I... Fortune, he wished, lifting his bubbled ale. That's Lenehan's ale. And then he says, Scepter will win in a canter, he said. He's the racing specialist. Scepter is the favorite in the horse race in the afternoon in Ascot. And he also will win in a canter. There are several ways to describe how quick a horse walks, or whatever you say. Trotting, a canter is a slow walk. So he says, Scepter is a favorite. Even if he goes slow, he will win. Canter, as well, but it so happens that canter also could remind us of the Latin cantare, to sing, canter, which it doesn't mean here. And then Boylan, I plunged a bit, said Boylan, winking and drinking. Not on my own, you know, fancy of a friend of mine. You can imagine who the friend of his is. And he obviously invested money at Lennon's recommendation on Scepter, the horse races at the back. And many people put some money on it. Lennon still drank and grinned at his tilted ale and at Miss Deuce's lips that all but hummed not shut, the ocean songs her lips had thrilled, Idolora's eastern seas. The song is Idolora's Queen of the Eastern Seas. It was one of these many songs about the Orient that was quite popular. Clock word. Miss Kennedy passed away. Flower. Wonder who gave. So both the barmaids think, who gave them the flower? Of course, it wasn't given. He had taken it away. Clock clacked. Miss Deuce took Boylan's coin, struck boldly the cash register. It clang, clock clacked. Fair one of Egypt. Teased and sorted in till and hummed and handed coins in change. Look to the west, that's also a song, a clack for me. So you see, you have the clock. Obviously, it is 4 o'clock, and that is the sound, and Boylan is paying. What time is that, Sir Boylan? 4? Now, we also know through Bloom that at 4, he obviously wrote to Molly, he would be there at 4, and now he's still here for 4 o'clock. Then we go again. Yeah.
His elbow sleeve. Let's hear the time, he said. The bag of Goulding Collars Ward led Bloom by rye bloom flowered tables. Aimless, he chose with agitated aim, bald Pat attending, a table near the door. Be near at 4, has he forgotten? Perhaps a trick. Not come, quite appetite. I couldn't do. Wait. Pat, waiter, waited. Sparkling, bronze, azure-eyed, blazure's sky-blue bow and eyes. Go on, pressed Lennon. There's no one. He never had.
To Flora's lips did hide.
High, a high note pealed in the treble clear.
Good. Let's hear the time. That obviously has a special meaning because I heard the time. Then we go outside again. The bag of Goulding, Collis Ward. That's another stale joke. Of course, he works for a company of Collis and Ward, and he puts his name first. Led Bloom by rye bloom flowered tables. Remember, when the bloom is on the rye. And the rye bloom, I think they're blue tables. And then it's an interesting sentence. Aimless, he chose with agitated aim, bald pat attending a table near the door. You see, aimless, he chose, he has no aim. He chose with agitated aim. It is not aimless. He pretends to be aimless, but he wants to have a seat where he can, in a way, see what Boylan is doing. But he cannot say it, so he pretends it doesn't matter. So aimless with agitated aim, there's the bald pat attending a table near the door. Be near. At 4. At the door, near, be near, at 4, near the door. Has he forgotten? Perhaps a trick? Not come. Wet appetite things. Boylan is late intentionally. You know, when there's an appointment, the more, the more estimated that the others want can come late. You have to be the one to be admired, and then you can be late. But I couldn't do it. Wait, Pat, waiter, waited. sparkling bronze, azure-eyed, blazer, sky blue, bow and tie. So the bronze is the barmaid, azure-eyed, azure or azure is blue, a blazer, sky blue. So you see they play with blue and azure, that kind of thing. She never heard. I know. Cyber. Go on, Prislinen. There's no one. He never heard. Meaning, she's obviously asking her to do a trick, a visual one, and he, Boylan, has never heard it, things like that. And then we hear the voice from the saloon, to Floral's lips did high. Actually, the song is to Floral lips, and it's misquoted. High, a high note pealed in the treble, clear. And now, yeah, we go on again.
Rose Deuce, communing with her rose that sank and rose, sought Blazes Boylan's flower and eyes. Please, please, he pleaded, overturning phrases of a vowel.
I could not leave thee.
Afterwards, Miss Deuce promised coyly. No, now, urged Lenehan. Sonne la cloche. Oh, do. There's no one. She looked, quick, Miss Ken out of earshot. Sudden, bent. Two kindling faces watched her bend. Quavering, the chords strayed from the air. Found it again, lost chord, and lost and found it, faltering. Go on, do, Sonne. Bending, she nipped a peak of skirt above her knee. Delayed. Taunted them still, bending, suspending, with willful eyes. Sonne. Smack. She let free, sudden, in rebound, her nipped elastic garter, smack warm against her smackable woman's warm-hosed thigh. La cloche! Cried Lethal Lenehan. Trained by owner, no sawdust there. She smiled smirk, supercilious, wept, aren't men, but lightward gliding, mild she smiled, on Boylan.
So that's her trick that Lennon obviously knows. Of course, it's a kind of visual seduction here. Before that, it was more oral. Bronze Deuce, communing with a rose that sank and rose, sought Blazes Boylan's flower and eyes. Please, please, Lennon. He pleaded over returning phrases of a vowel. I could not leave these. Again, the song from the saloon. So again, we hear songs and speak from different places close by. I could not leave thee. Afterwards, Miss Deuce promised coyly. This is a verb on afterwards. Afterwards, a bit later, but afterwards is a change bit. And of course, afterwit is something we all know. That's the kind of clever idea we have afterwards, not at the time. And also in reading this, we only sometimes afterwards notice something that went before. That kind of, so it is also a kind of descriptive phrase. Now, Earthlin, Sonne la cloche, French. Oh, do, there's no one. She looked quick, Miss Ken out of earshot. Sudden bent, two kindling faces watched her bend. This is now a kind of erotic climax. Quavering, the chord strayed from the air, found it again, lost chord, and lost and found it, faltering. Go on, do, Sonny. Bending, she nipped the peak of her skirt above her knee, delayed, taunted them still, bending, suspending with willful eyes. So you see, what she's doing, the trick is... She lifts her skirt a bit above the knee and plays with the elastic garter of the stockings. And of course, there would be stockings and things like that. And of course, she delays. That's a good trick. You wait at the bending, suspending. Suspending is nice. It is also suspense, of course. Sonny, smack. She let free sudden in rebound, her nipped elastic garter smack warm against her smackable woman's warm host lie. So that's an erotic climax, you know, for what it's worth. Like, for the time, obviously, like quite recent. So, seduction. La cloche, cried gleeful Lennon, trained by owner, like horse racing, trained by owner. No sawdust there, sawdust in pubs. And then she smiled, smirked, supercilious. I remember a discussion on email where people said, that's not grammatical. She smiled, smirked, superciliously. Or she smiled, comma, superciliously. That's silly, really. Grammatical root of, and I think it's perfectly suspended. She smiled, smirked. Smile is present, smirk is a bit disdainful. Wept, aren't men, remember she said, aren't men frightful idiots. But light was gliding, mild she smiled on Boylan. So she smirks, obviously, at the Lennon, but smiled on Boylan, for whom she did the whole thing. So you see, Boylan has some attraction. Yeah, that is. I think that's where we go on. Yeah.
You're the essence of vulgarity, she and Gliding said. Boylan eyed, tossed to fat lips his chalice, drank off his tiny chalice, sucking the last fat violet syrupy drops. His spellbound eyes went after her gliding head, as it went down the bar by mirrors, gilded arch for ginger ale, hock and claret glasses shimmering, a spiky shell, where it concerted, mirrored, bronze with sunnier bronze. Yes, bronze from nearby.
Sweetheart, goodbye.
I'm off, said Boyle with impatience. He slid his chalice brisk away, grasped his change. Wait a shake, begged Lenehan, drinking quickly. I wanted to tell you, Tom Rochford. Come on to Blazes, said Blazes, boiling, going. Lenehan gulped to go. Got the horn or what? He said. Wait, I'm coming.
So, yeah, she smiled when she was left on it. You're the essence of vulgarity, she in gliding said. Boylan eyed. That's quite interesting. How do you translate that? It is probably Boylan who has been looked at eyed, he in turn eyed. So I think one is passive and one is active, but it can be a mere repetition. I just want to show when you read this, how much scope you have in performing, you know. Actors could do a lot with it. Boylan eyed, tossed to fat lips his chalice, drank off his tiny chalice, sucking the last fat, violent syrupy drops. And you can see an erotic element here. His spellbound eyes went after her gliding head as it went down the bar by mirrors, gilded arch for ginger ale, hock and clary glasses shimmering, a spiky shell where it concerted mirrored bronze with sunnier bronze. And so here he watches her, and then there's a mirror, and you know these mirrors in pubs, they have all kinds of inscriptions and things like that. They're very elaborate and things like all the mirrors. Well, and here you see glasses mirrored, and of course the visual equivalent to mirrors is in music is the echo, the similar thing. A mirror is at the same time, but echo is with a delay, so you have that. And there's a shell there, a spiky shell. Yes, bronze from a nearby. That's one of these motifs that's repeated. Sweetheart, goodbye. That seems to be end of the song. That devil is at the back. I'm off, said Boylan with impatience. Here it is. He said it with impatience. It's not the same thing as I'm boiling with impatience. As a, when I point out all these little things, you might give a pitiful thought to the poor slaves, the translators. Can you imagine what you do with a thing like that when so much is dependent on whatever your language has? I'm off, said Boyle with impatience. He slid his chariot brisk away, grasped his chains. Wait a shake, begged Lennon, drinking quickly. I wanted to tell you, Tom Rochford, you see, Lennon wanted Boylan because he obviously wants him to talk about Rochford's invention, about the music hall, and since Boylan does such things as an impresario, he might be interested. So Boylan thinks he could be do a kind of deal where he got some profit. But of course, and we know why, Boylan has no time. Come on to Blazes, said Blazes, or going. Come on to Blazes. It might well be that he has his nickname, Blazes Boylan, because he says Blazes. Blazing is, of course, fire. And you can see that. And then we have a sentence that I've always admired. It's one of the shortest sentences in the book. Lenehan gulped to go. Do you realize how concise this is? When you have to run after somebody and you have to finish your drink, you gulped to go. So it is both quick and it's both a bit gulped to go. It's both a bit awkward. So that's a beautiful description or a reenaction of something that happened. Try to say it in German. So next time the shortest version will get the prize. Lennon gulped to go. And then Lennon, of course, he's disappointed. He said, got the horn or what? He said, wait, I'm coming. Got the horn. He means, of course, an erection, which is not literally true, but there's something to it. But horn, of course, is also a musical instrument. So there's that. And now Boylan is leaving.
He followed the hasty creaking shoes, but stood by nimbly by the threshold, saluting forms, a bulky with a slender. How do you do, Mr. Dollard? Hey, how do? How do? Then Dollard's vague bass answered, turning an instant from Father Cowley's woe. He won't give you any trouble, Bob. Al Bergen will speak to the Longfellow. We'll put a barley straw on that Judas Iscariot's ear this time. Sighing, Mr. Dedalus came through the saloon, a finger soothing an eyelid. Oh, we will, Ben Dollard yodeled jollily. Come on, Simon, give us a ditty. We heard the piano. Bald Pat, bothered waiter, waited for drink orders. Powerful Richie and Bloom, let me see, not make him walk twice. His corns, four now. How warm this black is. Of course, nerves a bit. Refractors at heat. Let me see, cider, yes, bottle of cider.
What's that? Mr. Dedalus said. I was only vamping, man. Come on, come on, Ben Dollard called. Be gone, don't care. Come, Bob.
So, you remember that in the previous chapter we saw Dedalus and Ben Dollard and Father Cowley together. Dedalus came before the others are now following. But he followed that Boylan leaving. He followed the hasty green shoes, but stood by nimbly by the threshold, saluting forms a bulky with a slender. Bulky Don Ben Dollard is quite fat, and the other one, Father Cowley, is slender. How do you do, Mr. Dollard? Hey, how do you do, Ben Dollard's vague boss answered, turning an instant from Father Cowley's woe. You know, Father Cowley cannot pay the landlord and they want to have some time and they still talk about that. He won't give you any trouble, Bob, that is the pawnbroker. Alf Bergen, that's another name we heard, will speak to the Longfellow, that's also a name in the office. We'll put a barley straw in the Judas Iscariot's ear. This obviously means we will put a stop to that. But to put the barristor in the ear is, of course, the siren's motive when the sailors, the rowers, had to put wax in their ears. But here it means, look, and of course, again, Judas Iscariot, that is an anti-Semitic reference because they think the pawnbroker is a Jew. So there's that at this time. Sighing, Mr. Douglas came through the saloon, a finger soothing an eyelid. Ho-ho, we will, Pandora yodeled jollily. Come on, Simon, give us a ditty, a song. We heard a piano. And then, switching over, bald Pat, bothered waiter, waited for drink orders. See, Pat has his rhythm all his own again. Power for Richie. He's now taking the orders from Richard Goulding and Bloom. Let me see. Not make him walk twice. See, Bloom always considerate to make the order now so he doesn't have to do it again. His corns. Maybe he doesn't walk easily. Four now. It is now four. How warm this black is. Of course, nervous a bit. Clearly, Bloom is a bit nervous now. Boyle is on the way to his home. And nervous a bit. Refracts, is it? I remember early when he went out, he said, it's a warm, a sunny day, and you feel it more in black clothes. Why is because black, he said, refracts, the light was wrong, but he still comes up, absorbs the heat. Let me see. Cider. Yes, bottle of cider. Yeah, that's where we go. Yeah, bottle of cider. There you go.
Mumbled Dollard, bulky slops before them. Hold that fellow with that. Hold him now. Into the saloon. He plumped him, Dollard, on the stool. His gouty paws plumped cords. Plumped, stopped, abrupt. Bald Pat in the doorway met Teela's gold returning. Bothered, he wanted power and cider. Bronze by the window watched, bronze from afar. Jingle, a tinkle, jaunted. Bloom heard a jing, a little sound. He's off. Lights up of breath, Bloom sighed, on the silent blue-hued flowers. Jingling, he's gone. Jingle, here.
Love and war, Ben, Mr. Dedalus said. God be with all times.
Miss Deuce's brave eyes, unregarded, turned from the cross-blind, smitten by sunlight. Gone. Pensive. Who knows? Smitten. The smiting light. She lowered the drop-blind with the sliding cord. She drew down pensive. Why did he go so quick when I... About her bronze, over the bar where Bull stood by Sister Gold. In exquisite contrast. Contrast inexquisite, non-exquisite. Slow, cool, dim, sea-green, sliding depth of shadow, O'Donnell.
Good. Yeah, what's that, Dedalus said? I was only vamping, man. Vamping means playing on the piano a little bit in an order. It doesn't have yet a sense of vamp that he took on later on. It would suit here, but here it has to do with playing. Come on, come on, Bandola. Be gone, thou care. That's another song, Be Gone, Thou Care. Come on. He ambled, Dollard, bulky slops. He has bulky trousers, we heard, before them. Hold the fellow with a hold him now. And that was what was said in the previous chapter. It was one of these interpolations. They're now carried over. Hold him now into the saloon. He plumped him, Dollard, on the stool. Dollard is plump and voluminous. His gouty paws plumped cords. Plumped, stopped, abrupt. And you can see here, plumped, stopped, abrupt. Each word is ends on a stop, on a double conscience. Stop. And that is not easy to do in, say, Spanish or Italian, when you usually have vowels at the end. So the kind of the Germanic type of consonants Joyce uses here, and other languages don't have this. They have other endings, so it becomes something different. Balls pat in the doorway, met tealess gold returning. Bothered, he wanted power and cider. He's now taking, ordering the drinks from the barmaid. Bronze by the window watched, bronze from afar. Jingle a tinkle jaunted, and this is now the jaunty car. Bloom heard a jing, a little sound. He's off. Light sob of breath, Bloom sighed on the silent blue-hued flowers. You can see that this is a sad moment for Bloom. After all, something happens, which, by the way, he doesn't interfere. And you so can see here, one of the reasons you sit and listen to music is when you hear music, you may not think of something that troubles you. And you will see that most people have some trouble. It may be money or loneliness or whatever. So music is very often a consolation we need for that. Bluebird flowers. Jingling is gone. Jingle here. Then the three in the saloon around the piano. Love and war. There's a song, Love and War. Mendelssohn said, God be with old times. Miss Duce's brave eyes, unregarded, turned from the cross blind. So Duce, who has just in a way exposed herself for Boylan, and what does he do? He's off. So she also is disappointed, frustrated, from cross blind, smitten by sunlight, gone, pensive. Who knows? Smitten, the smiting light. And here's another, you can be smitten by love, which she is in a way, but here it means smitten is the smiting sunlight. So what you have is like a kind of authorial footnote in parenthesis. The lowered drop blind with a sliding cord. She drew down pensive. And then here we have her thoughts, and you realize with these simple English words how much frustration and disappointment are in them. Why did you go so quick when I think there's a whole sadness in it, and the melody does it, and yet they're the most common English words. About her bronze, over the bar, where bald stood by Sister Gold, in exquisite contrast, in exquisite, non-exquisite. That's also an echo of something we heard before. Slow, cool, dim, sea-green sliding, depth of shadow, Eau de Nil. And that is what she saw. Eau de Nil is how the Vice Regal, how they were dressed. Eau de Nil, that also brings back. I think now we stop here for the simple reason that my voice gets a bit exhausted. And you can see here how it is that every little sentence echoes a lot. And it is. So the reading is very slow and takes a lot of time. And you can also see that almost each sentence has its own melody. It's a great chapter for performance, for reading, and if you read it, you can overdo it. In fact, you should. You should feel dramatic, like the opera and things like that. So that is a chapter, and as you can see, it was something entirely new that nobody had experienced before, so that even people like Ezra Pound were confused and then couldn't go along. In the meantime, 100 years have gone, and we're quite used to this. It's obviously a great chapter also for musicians, and you say it is great for reading aloud. But thank you for listening. Then next
thank you, Anto. Thank you.
Thank you.